Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and we have a very special episode of the podcast today because I'm going to be speaking with the winner of King of the Nerds Season 3, and that would be, and stop listening now if you don't want to be spoiled, because I'm going to speak with Jonathan Adler, recently crowned King of the Nerds, and he'll be my guest here on the podcast. So that's what's coming up here in this episode. Before we get to my interview with Jonathan, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, and those are our friends over at Retail Me Not. Now, a lot of you guys know Retail Me Not from the website, which you go to a lot of times if you're buying something online, and then before you check out, you go ahead and you Google a promo code, and you end up on RetailMeNot.com. But we are talking about the Retail Me Not app, because you hear advertisers all the time talking about giving out these promo codes, but you got to find them. That's why if you get the app from Retail Me Not, you don't have to worry about the hunting and searching for the promo code, because you can get them all in one place. Thousands of coupons from places like Kohl's, Domino's, Best Buy, and more. Amazing deals like 60% off, free shipping, and free gifts with your purchase. So get a text invite to download the free trial of Retail Me Not's app right now on your phone. Just text RHAP2. 42767. That's 42767. Then redeem your coupons right there from your phone whenever you're checking out. It's that easy. Retail Me Not is the best way to have thousands of coupons right on your phone so you can save money on whatever you're purchasing. So text RHAP to 42767. You'll get a text message with a link to download it, and never forget another coupon again. Stop wasting money. Text RHAP to 42767 right now. Message and data rates may apply. For terms and privacy, visit RetailMeNot.com. All right, everybody. We have a very special treat today on the podcast. We've been covering King of the Nerds all season long, and now we are joined by His Royal Majesty himself, Dr. King of the Nerds. Here is Jonathan Adler. Long may he reign.
Ah, thank you. Hello. It's good to be here. You know, I have to take my chariot over, of course, but it's been good.
Yes. Thank you, Your Grace. Thank you for joining us here on the podcast to talk about your triumphant win here on King of the Nerds Season 3. Now, how long ago did you guys film this?
Oh, it was in over the summer, so like July, August. And so, yeah, I've been sitting on knowing that I won for 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now it's exciting to finally have that out there, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in addition to being fun that it's a win, I also now like, okay, finally that secret's, I'm done with it. Everyone knows I can move on with my life.
Yes. And so how have people treated you differently now that you are not only a contestant on King of the Nerds, but you are the winner of King of the Nerds?
You know, it's funny because, you know, when you're on a show like this, you know, you have people on Facebook and you're periodically messaging you being like, oh, I'm watching the show. It's been fun. But the moment I won, suddenly, like, my Facebook blew up. Like, everyone was like, oh, my God, I just saw you won. My boss emailed me, you know, the secretary. You know, I've had, you know, random people just come up to me. Just everyone's been congratulating me, which is really, it's been a thrill.
Yeah. And so now the prize for King of the Nerds is $100,000?
$100,000, or yes, as I think Caitlin said in the show, $72,000 after taxes.
Yes, yes. And so how does that, if you don't mind me getting into the details, sure. I know how this works on Survivor, but I'm interested to know on King of the Nerds, do they just mail it to you? Because there's not a live finale or anything like that.
Right, and they don't give it to you until, because if the show is canceled or something.
Wait, if the show got canceled, then they don't have to give you the money?
I don't know, but I assume they don't give it to you in advance just for that reason. Or like, I don't know, if I spoiled it, they probably wouldn't give it to me. So,
yes.
You know, they don't, like, it's not like, you know, the moment after filming ended, like, here's your check, sir. So I'm still in the process of getting it now.
Still, you know,
the check they said is in the mail, which I assume, you know, they're probably
heard that
not
before.
Me. Yeah, exactly.
Wow. And it's not, it's $100,000. It's not like $100,000 in the Little Caesars coupons or anything like that, right?
It's just an envelope filled with Monopoly money and a ha-ha written in there.
Yeah, it's ha-ha and ready.
Yeah. So,
all right, well, anyway, congratulations on that. So I'm interested to know because, you know, I felt like a lot of people thought this was a polarizing season because it was a season that was marked by a lot of strategy in terms of this alliance, which you ended up sort of being a reluctant part of. And always it's seemingly having like one foot in and one foot out of the Secret Six alliance. And it's funny because it seemed like it started with the four women and then it ended up in the final two being the two men who sort of joined in at the end. So I just love to get your thoughts on the Secret Six and how big of a factor you feel like it was in your ultimate win.
Sure. Okay. So I have a whole bunch of things to say about this. So get ready.
That's why you're here.
Yeah, that's right. Well, first off, I think, you know, being the Secret Six, you know, a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of people who are like, wow, these people just, all the cool kids got together because they were cooler and outcasted the lame nerds or whatever. But really, it was just a bunch of us, you know, essentially everyone in the Secret Six, we'd all watch season one and two. And in those seasons, there's really not that much politicking or alliance work. And I think all of us kind of like had this vibe of, oh man, if I was on that show, I'd be wheeling and dealing, I'd be backstabbing, and I'd be playing them all. So I think the Secret Six formed when six of us realized we were all ready to play that game. So we all came in, you know, with this idea of, okay, we're going to, you know, make an alliance. We're going to work together. We're going to use the political angle to get far enough in the show, right? Because even if you don't make $100,000, you really don't want to get out first or second.
Right.
And, you know, it's really interesting because a lot of people are watching and being like, oh, people only got sent home because the Secret Six sent them in. But I think if you actually look at the votes that happened, I don't think the Secret Six actually influenced that much. If we just go through real quick. So the first episode, you know, Jacob got out before there was even a Secret Six. Thomas was going to go out anyways in episode two because he was the weakest. Same with, you know, Todd in episode three, the person rooting, one of the people rooting for him to go out was Caitlin, who had no idea about the Secret Six. In episode four, Colby went out. He would have gone out anyway. So the point is, it really, the Secret Six, I don't think actually from a sending people into the Nerd Off lines, sending people in the Nerd Off perspective, I don't think it actually influenced that much. I mean, it was great that we all were able to work together and know that we were a little bit protected, and that helped, but I don't think it ultimately changed much.
Now, there were times where you wanted to break off the Secret Six that I think that early on, and tell me if I have any of this wrong, you were sort of against it, that you didn't see the point, and then you seemed like you were on board, but then you sort of wanted out. Again, could you talk about your own sort of wrestling with being in the Secret Six?
Right. Okay, so a couple things about that. One, I mean, I did at some level, I suppose, feel, you know, it felt a little crummy, especially when we voted Caitlin in twice, because I thought Caitlin was, you know, probably someone I wanted to, as much as possible, work with, and I wanted to make her know that I'm, you know, out there for her if she ever wants to get an alliance, which she did in a couple episodes later. So I kind of felt bad that we were, you know, having this sort of targeting a particular person. But I knew it was good strategy, so I stayed in. And, you know, it's funny because I spent all my time in the Secret Six thinking, okay, at some point the Secret Six is going to break and they're going to point fingers at me if our team loses, right? Heather and Amanda were the other two people in the Secret Six on my team, and they were really strongly bonded. Like, they're always, we're talking about being friends and how they're working together. So I knew that if something were to happen, I would probably be on the chopping block, so I had to just be ready for that to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, that ultimately is the situation that occurred in episode five. Team Smash lost for the Secret Six person to go in. It was me, Amanda, Heather, and it looked like it was going to be me being the person who sent in, which is why I'm glad I set up all that, you know, set up all that political stuff with the people outside of the Secret Six before that, so I would not be sent in.
Yes. Now, there was also a point where it seemed like that you and Caitlin were going to get something going this season, but then it seemed like that was quickly dropped after you had this big flirtation with Caitlin. Was there more to that than we saw in the episode?
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? So me and Caitlin got together and said, okay, you know, I said to her, okay, look, here's the Secret Six. Here's what's happening. You know, this is a very pivotal moment. I told her, okay, here's exactly what's going on. And if you actually look, the two people who weren't in the Secret Six at that point were Caitlin and Colby. But I didn't tell Colby because I figured Colby would probably go along with whatever Caitlin did or I told him. But Caitlin, I knew, was the pivotal vote. And so, you know, we actually did work together to make sure I didn't go in at that point. And even going forward, I think Caitlin and I were never adversarial. You know, we always were working, you know, we maybe weren't fully allied, but I don't think at any point me and Caitlin were like, okay, now I'm taking you down.
Yeah.
It wasn't like we were allied, but I say we both had aligned interests.
Okay. Now, there was a moment in this season where you volunteered that you were going to go into the nerd war this season, and then ultimately let poor Amanda go into it for you. Now, she came through it okay, but what were you thinking when you volunteered?
Oh my God. Okay. So let me go through exactly what I was thinking that episode. Here's the thing, is that I knew what the right thing to do was to throw Heather in, right? Like, you have to do the strategy stuff to win. But I felt awful afterwards because, like, Heather was probably one of the people I was closest to, if not the person I was closest to in the house. And I knew Colby needed to be taken out. And I knew throwing her in was right. But I threw her in. It worked. And then I felt pretty bad about it. You're in this house, you know, it's stressful. During all this filming, you're just challenge after challenge. And, you know, I just snapped at that point. And I thought, okay, look, it's not worth it to be the bad guy who has to do all these evil things to win. Like, everyone else in the house is talking about friendship and fun and super pals, and I'm here going on and just doing jerk move after jerk move to get ahead. And so that's when I got on the table, put my foot down, and said, I'm going to take out Colby. I thought that right until we lost, and we found out that the challenge was something I knew literally nothing about.
Yeah.
I know lots of nerdy things. I know nothing about horror movies. And Amanda knows a ton about horror movies. So I had two options here, which I think I mentioned in the episode, but I have two options, right? I can either keep on my word, you know, I said I was going to go in, and lose, right? There's no chance of me winning. I will embarrass myself because I will get decimated by Colby, but at least I'll keep to my word. Or I can let Amanda go in, which, you know, she'll take out, you know, she potentially could take out Colby. It looks great for her that she actually takes down someone who we feel is a threat. And, you know, we take down her, someone who feels like it's the threat. And, you know, I have this great strategic move where I stay in the house. So at the end of the day, I had to make the decision of, do I want to look good or do I want to win? And I chose winning, which I think a lot of the fans were disappointed by. But at the end of the day, you know, I like money, so.
Yeah. Well, don't, just because I asked the question doesn't mean that I disagree with how you handled it. That, you know, from what we talk about on Survivor, I would, you know, and when we did the podcast with that week, I said you were crazy for even saying that in the first place. So you ultimately got to the right decision.
Right. Okay. So I was absolutely crazy. And like, if I made a mistake in the house, it was saying that line of, I'm going to take down Colby. However, suppose I didn't say that. Suppose I just kept my mouth shut after we lost and then moved on. It's possible that if I hadn't shown emotion when we lost, Amanda wouldn't have shown emotion either, because it was a very emotional move on her part to decide to take down Colby, even if it gave her the risk of going home.
Yes.
So had I kept my mouth shut, it actually might have ended up making her not feel obligated to take down Colby, and instead I'd go in and lose. So on the one hand, yeah, it was super embarrassing for me, and I let out lots of emotions. It was bad strategically, but it's hard for me to think, you know, it's hard for me to think, oh, obviously I shouldn't have done it, because in some sense it may have actually helped me out.
I want to talk about your final duel against Ben, which was, I thought, was very compelling. It really went down to the wire, went down to the last challenge, and you guys are both neck and neck. It couldn't have been closer, but the way that it went was, so you win rounds 1 and 2, and you get off to a fast start and you're up 2-0, but then he comes back and wins 3 in a row.
Yeah. And one of them was a math challenge.
Yes. Including he beat you at your own game.
Yeah.
So what was your emotional state like after you won 2 and now you lost 3, and now it's like, oh my God, I'm choking and I'm going to blow this.
Right. So first off, imagine that in the last 2 weeks, Ben got first place in the trivia challenge. And then he got first place in the challenge where he went down from 4 to 2. So he knows tons of trivia. And I know he's a gamer, right? He's on the show because he plays Star Wars card games. You know, he knows all about video games. So I'm going into this final head-to-head feeling like I'm the underdog. So I win the first 2 challenges and I think, okay, I have a chance. And then I lose one and I lose one and I lose one. And by the time I'd lost 3, I'm like, okay, well, this is going to be an embarrassing end of the show. And especially a couple of the things, like, I knew the crossword puzzle I wouldn't win because, like I said, Ben knows a lot more about trivia, so crosswords really aren't my thing. The logic puzzle was a hard loss. The math challenge was enormously difficult to take. And if you look, the issue with the math challenge was essentially, it was, you know, you had to make an equation out of these numbers, and I think the number you had to get was 11, but there was a 17 and a 19. And you're allowed to use addition, subtraction, multiplication, division. I see the 17 and 19. I'm a math guy, and I'm thinking, okay, these are complex numbers. You know, how are we going to, like, you know, maybe can I divide 17? Well, 17 is prime. And, like, I'm having this train of thought, and Ben's like, I'm done. And I'm like, oh, are you kidding me? So I feel like, in a sense, for that one, it's actually the fact that I do so much math actually hurt me. Or at least that's what I tell myself when I go to bed. But, yeah, so I went into that game of Connect Four thinking, okay, this is a Connect Four. It really could go either way. Just don't do anything stupid. Because the way with Connect Four, the way you lose Connect Four is you don't pay attention and you mess something up and leave another person advantage. And I think you mentioned in the podcast, if you notice, I'm playing all these games really frantically, as is my style in general. I'm just a frantic person, which leads yourself to make a lot of simple mistakes like that. So I still was worried at that point. But once I actually got the win in Connect Four, I thought, okay, maybe I have a chance to be King of the Nerds.
Yeah. I forget who said it in the episode, but it was interesting that you were winning the things that were head to head and he was winning the things that were something that you were just solving by yourself. And ultimately, the last thing that you ultimately won was the type of thing that you do it by yourself. But I thought that that was an interesting comparison of your two styles.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think it's, you know, I learned a lot about myself from being on reality TV. And the thing I learned is I have trouble in situations where you're just doing a thing by yourself under a clock when someone's doing it right next to you, right? You saw in episode 3, there was this math challenge with the boat and, you know, we have these simple math problems and I got one of them wrong and Colby ended up noticing the mistake and fixing it. And the reason why I messed it up, like, it's not a hard equation, you know, the formula for the area of a parallelogram, but I was just so in the mindset of, oh God, every second I wait is a second he gets ahead, that I couldn't focus on the actual problem I was working on. Whereas anytime you do a head-to-head problem, like I can see Ben, I can see Penn kind of panicking a little bit while we're playing chess. And that allows me to be a lot more confident and not make those kinds of mistakes.
How was Ben after you won the challenge? Because, you know, we only see like the next like couple minutes, but you guys are together presumably for a while after that. Did he take the loss hard?
Obviously you can't go through like something like this without taking it hard, but I think Ben has been outstanding. And, you know, I don't know, a lot of the cast members, we all talk about how we're all still friends. And we all like each other on Facebook, or whatever, but like me and Ben, I feel like Ben's one of the closest people to the cast I got to after the show. I mean, he's a really funny guy. He's super nice. And yeah, he took it, you know, I think he took it really well. And I'm really happy that he's the person I went against in the end, because he's such a great guy. You know, in a sense, I actually made it kind of feel bad when I won because I really liked him. But yeah, I was really happy how well he took it and how close we've been after the show.
And what do you do after you win that day? Like, I assume like this is like the middle of the day when this is over, or this is like at nighttime. And then how do you celebrate?
Well, alcohol is, of course, involved.
Yes.
And, you know, when you're filming reality television, you have no access to electronics. So at that point, you get your electronics back. So that's also kind of a celebration.
Whoa.
In a sense.
Yes.
I know.
This was a season of debauchery, I felt like, on King of the Nerds. Well, how crazy was that in that house, especially like that party that you couldn't participate in?
Oh, that one was especially crazy. Yeah. And, you know, it was nice because we all, you know, we were all friends. We all liked each other and we all, you know, we all knew, right, that last party, everyone knew this was the last night here. Let's enjoy it. You know, me and Ben had to enjoy it a little bit less, but it's really just nice to have this one last night where we all got together. And I think you saw their shots were like 2/3 of the cast were in their underwear, and I think they cut it. But what we were doing in our underwear was the two songs we made for the music challenge. We were doing our dances from that in our underwear. So, I mean, this is ridiculous stuff, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. It seemed like it because, I mean, I think that that's a little bit different than what people would expect to go on in the King of the Nerds house.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. So we had, for every party like this, we had a night where we just played a puzzle. And like, we actually, you know, we probably were bad television because, you know, we'd just done some like enormously stressful challenge. And they're like, okay, now you guys can hang out. And we're like, we just want to do this jigsaw puzzle. And they're like, you sure you can't make better television than that? Not that they tell us what to do, but you know, like it.
Right. They're getting paid also to film you guys do a jigsaw puzzle, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And you can tell the, you know, cameramen are like clearly like sighing.
Right.
So, you know, for every day like that, we had a day of puzzles or board games.
Okay.
And it's really interesting, you know, hearing some of the feedback. I saw some commenter be like, psh, this show, I thought it was about nerds, not frat parties. You know, but I think it's important.
Yeah.
I think it's important to know that, you know, just because we're nerds doesn't mean we don't know how to, you know, let loose.
Right. And there is sort of like the band camp idea, right? Where it's actually the people who get the craziest are the people who, you know, are like-minded and in an environment where it's safe to be who you actually are.
Exactly. Right. Like, yeah, you're on television, but you're hanging out with these 11 other people who all are into, you know, the same kind of wild fun you are. So it really, yeah, I think we all just let loose a little bit.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, I think there are a couple different nights there in the house where it's like, okay, we just finished a challenge. Tomorrow we have to make a terrible vote. Let's drink our way out of this.
All right. I want to talk about going back to the Nerd Anthem challenge. And tell me about, you know, you guys did this big rap where Colby wrote a lot of the lyrics and you guys were judged by Moby. And this was, I think, one of the most iconic scenes from the season of King of the Nerds. Can you tell us what it was like for you guys and maybe anything that we didn't see about your critique from Moby?
Sure. I mean, obviously things get cut in the for the reasons of time. But basically, you know, what you saw is essentially right. We had done our song. We stood up there. We're ready to be judged. You know, at this point, this is what, episode 4? So we're getting pretty used to being judged and getting some feedback. And Moby just starts laying on, you know, saying things like, well, you know, do you actually know the Klingon Shakespeare? You know, he's saying all these things that, you know, are ludicrous, right? When you write a song, you don't, the song doesn't have to be 100% factually accurate to life. Like, that's not the point of a song. And you can see that it's, you know, it's starting to get to us a little bit. And Heather, you know, the very loud, outspoken, says what she wants, doesn't care. You know, Heather, it just gets to her. And she starts going off, just as you see on camera. And, you know, we can tell at that point that it's not resonating with the judges. But at that point, you know, screw it. It's clear we didn't exactly have his vote. So we, you know, let Heather go for a little bit. Then eventually, as you saw, I went in and said, okay, Heather, shh, and covered her mouth. Because something, otherwise she would just keep going on. But I think our point was well made.
Did you guys have any interaction with Moby after the fact? Like, did he say anything to you guys? Like, hey, I know it's hard on you guys, but hey, like, you know, keep up the good work. Or that was it for the interaction?
Nope. We just got to talk with the judges and everything you saw is, we didn't really have anything more than what you saw. So there wasn't like a afterwards pat on the back. No, sorry. I mean, maybe he did feel bad. I don't know. I can only assume so, but we didn't hear it.
He was just so cranky with you guys.
I know.
Like,
but
what does Moby, who is, you know, an international recording superstar, what does he need to come on King of the Nerds and beat you guys up over your rap song?
Yeah, I mean, we have no Grammys.
Yes.
We're just starting out.
And you're not even like aspiring musicians. You know, you guys were just doing something for a contest. I don't understand why he was so hard on you guys.
I know. I sit at my normal day job is sitting in front of code, you know, right, doing math. Like, I'm out of my element already. Now you're, you know, giving me crap because I said something about Shakespeare and Klingon. Like, come on.
Yeah. Like, if you went to some competition, like, let's say, like, on American Idol this season, they had, for whatever reason, they had a challenge where there was some advantage to like create like some sort of mathematic equation. And they called you in and these kids did a very subpar math equation. Would you come in and rip these musicians a new one?
Well, wait, sorry. Would Moby be one of next to the children writing math too?
Yes, he's like the voice. He's coaching them. Yes.
That's right. And I mean, you know, I've had some experience doing some teaching in my life, and you know, of course, it's always important that when even when someone does something wrong, you say, okay, well, I didn't like this, but you did this part right, and you're doing really good. And I feel like Moby forgot that step. So I try to not do that with the poor kids, you know, on American Idol doing their math equations. But who knows? Maybe the power will get to me.
Okay. How about Penn Jillette? Did you guys have Penn Jillette, or he was on the other on Huluvu?
Oh, he was on the other team. We had Rochelle.
Okay. How was that day?
Oh, God, that was so funny. You see a fraction of how funny he was in person. But like, there was a guy, you know, the guy in charge of reading the rules for the game. He was trying to read the rules to, you know, explain the rules to Penn Jillette. And just every time he'd say anything, he'd be like, no, wait. Or like, he'd just try and cause the guy to trip up. And so at one point, the person reading the rules was like, okay, so then you get 10 bonus points. And Penn Jillette's like, wait, they're bonus points? They're not regular points? What's the difference between regular points and bonus points? And this is after every single sentence. So like, I think he must have caused an extra half hour in the filming process just by being sassy. But it was a lot of fun. Yeah. Okay, and one anecdote from that. So we had those pens to write on the board.
Yeah, Penn Jillette.
That's right. We named them after him. We had those pens to write on the board, and at one point, you know, our team had them because we were doing the writing, and then Penn Jillette's like, okay, when are we going to get our pens? And he's like, I don't want their pens. Their pens are like, the green team touched them. And so Heather looks at Penn Jillette and just slowly licks the pen. And he's like, oh my God. So eventually they got they said, okay, now hand the pens over to the other team. And Penn Jillette gets it and like, oh, is this the gross Heather pen? And he chucks it across the set. It goes flying. It hits my shoe. And so then for like 3 months, my shoe had Penn Jillette's autograph.
Wow.
I know. I was honored.
He threw the pen without the cap on it?
That's right. That's the kind of renegade he was.
Wow.
It was very funny. No one got hurt.
Yeah. Well, that's fun. That's cool that he came in. I mean, I would think that would be the attitude that you would come in and be a guest judge or participant on King of the Nerds if you're a celebrity. Like, I don't know why you would come in and be cranky like some people.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I, you know, I've never been a judge on reality TV, so I don't know what the stresses are like.
Right.
But you want to go in and have fun.
Yeah.
And I got lucky on the show, right? I don't think I ever really got to the point where, you know, everyone was gunning for me and I could have potentially snapped. But I always tried to make sure I was having a lighthearted good time because, you know, at the end of the day, you just want to make sure you're having fun.
Yeah. One of the challenges I thought you really excelled in early on was the cosplay challenge. And I felt like you did a really strong job. Could you talk a little bit about what that challenge was like?
Sure. Okay, so that was a really interesting challenge because basically we said, okay, cosplay challenge. Who's our cosplay expert? You know, Heather and Amanda. Heather especially has tons of experience making costumes. And on the first challenge, I kind of took, you know, Heather and I took, you know, on the first Rube Goldberg challenge, I took lead on doing the engineering. Heather did on the art. And so on this challenge, I'm like, okay, Heather, you're in charge. I'm going to be your backup. So we're working on these costumes. I'm making the robot. She's making the rest of them. And Amanda and Colby are writing the script. And so they write the script and they say, okay, here's our script. And I'm like, okay, I want to look at this. And so I look at it and it's like, it's okay, but it's just not that interesting. So I'm like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to put a million jokes in this. So I start writing jokes. I get like 2 out of 15 pages in and Colby walks up to me. He's like, what's going on? I'm like, I'm trying to make the script funny. He said, okay. And so then we spend the next like 2 hours just, you know, spitballing jokes. Like, you know, oh, what if the manager is like this boring middle management guy who just wants to get ahead? And Colby's like, yeah, and then his dying words could be, my 401k. And so Colby and I just are going back and forth on this. And then finally, we're like, okay, this script's funny. Let's bring in everyone else. So we brought in Heather, Amanda, and Ori. And they sit them down and we say, okay, we're going to read you the script. Just tell us what you think. And it was actually so funny that the camera crew started laughing, which is really a problem when you're filming stuff.
Right.
And like everyone's bursting out laughing and we're like, okay, yeah, Lily on the blue team's got the cosplayer. They should win this, but we just might have a chance.
No, you did a great job. And you were the robot, right?
Yeah, that's right. And it's interesting because I'm like, at first I'm like, should I feel bad? I kind of got the part with the least lines and I'm like, oh, but it has the least lines, but maybe it's the most, it's about the actions. And so I got to have fun, twerk on stage.
Yeah.
One more anecdote about that. So if you noticed, I twerk really badly.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened, I'm not really into pop culture, so I know twerking's a thing, but I don't actually know what it is. And so it's the morning of the cosplay challenge, and I'm like, look, guys, can anyone just show me what twerking's supposed to look like? And every single member of our teammate or of our team was like, nope, I'm not doing that for you. And I'm like, okay, then we're just going to see what happens.
Yeah. So how did you do it then?
Well, I knew it somehow involved shaking your butt. I didn't know. I guess it's actually up and down, but I did side to side, I guess. I don't know. I figured this robot just learned what emotions were half an hour ago. He probably isn't supposed to be an expert on twerking yet.
Yeah. Let me ask you a couple questions that I got from the listeners of Rob as a Podcast. Dan Sinensky wants to know, who was your closest ally slash best friend, and who was your biggest threat and rival? Start with the threat and the rival. Like, who were you really concerned about? And did you have a rivalry with that person?
Whew. Okay. So I'd say the big three I was worried about. I was worried about Colby, of course, because Colby wasn't especially strong in the nerd wars. We were doing teamwork. But any nerd off had a very high probability of being trivia. And anytime it was trivia, he was likely to win.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a threat, but he was a threat I could avoid just by having a teammate take him down. I was more worried for the end game. I actually was the most worried about Ben, because I think Caitlin, of course, was very strong, but she was strong in similar things that I was strong at. You know, if it was an engineering challenge near the end, I'd be able to take her on. If it was a nerd, you know, something about nerd culture or geek culture, I actually had an edge on her. But Ben to me was really the guy who, he is strong in areas that I'm weak and that could take me down, especially because, like, you know, in previous seasons, the end had to do a lot with trivia, which is an area I'm weaker at.
Yeah. I really liked how people described Colby as just being, you know, a mile wide and an inch deep of that. He just knows like a tiny bit of just trivia about every single subject.
Right. And I mean, if you just look at previous seasons, so many of the nerd offs, which are the very thing that sends you home, those are trivia. And if you're a person who's won $375,000 by knowing trivia, like, you're going to be considered a threat. And so it's not surprising. You can say, oh yeah, the Secret Six is being exclusive, and that's why they're taking out Colby, who's so strong. But really, it's, we know he's a person who will take someone else out in a nerd off. So let's make sure the person he's attacking in nerd offs aren't us.
All right. Renee Lucas wants to know, knowing what the challenges were, is there somebody that you feel like would have beaten you in the final competition? Like, have you done the spreadsheet of those seven challenges against all the other contenders? Is there a person that you think would have won?
That's a great question.
That's a spreadsheet.
Yeah, that's right. I should make a spreadsheet out of that. I would say in that final competition, you need to be able to think very quickly on your feet and be able to do a whole bunch of different tasks. I think for that one, I would say, me, Ben, or Caitlin, all of us, you know, Ben and I obviously were extremely close. A hair's breadth different in any one of those challenges, Ben would have won. I think Caitlin would have had a strong ability to win that. I could see Heather would have been very good. Rochelle does lots of gaming. She might have been able to, you know, squeak out enough wins on the, you know, because I think three or four of those were gaming challenges. I'd say those people were especially strong on those categories, especially Caitlin and Ben, I think. Both them two, especially. Obviously, Ben got very close. I think Caitlin would have been very close as well.
Okay. Our co-host from the King of the Nerds podcast, Mark Solero, wants to know, how do you want to die next season? Do they give you an option?
So they're telling me, like, oh, we're thinking about it. We're planning stuff. And so I have, there's a death I want. And I'm afraid if I say it aloud, then I won't get it, right? Because it'll be like, oh, everyone knows that already. But let me just say this. It's very easy to have my death be something math related. Oh, he's the math guy. Of course it should be math. But I really want my death to be backstabbing House of Cards related, right? I want my politicking to catch up with me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, come on. It's math, like, anyone does math. But who's the jerk who went in and was able to politic his way to a victory? Like, that's something I'm proud of.
Like, you want, like, Colby to cut your brakes or something like that?
See, but that's not politicking. Like, I want, like, I don't know, maybe Heather, like, causes the vote, you know, like, so the scene, okay, I'm going to set the scene, you know, like, I'm in the Oval Office, I'm wearing, like, the American flag pin, and I'm like, my fellow nerds, And then, but then somehow, like, Heather gets an impeachment vote on me, and then I get, you know, flown away in the, you know, the Marine helicopter. I don't know. Something like
crashes?
That. Because Colby cut the brakes. I guess helicopters don't have brakes.
Yeah, something like that. All right. We'll workshop it. We got a lot of time. We have a lot of time. Okay. Here is a question that is from Alex Kidwell, who wants to know, could Jonathan give us a more detailed description of day-to-day life at Nerdvana? There seems to be a lot of great toys and gadgets that you have access to in the downtime that never make the show. I'm interested also to know, like, how many days does the season of King of the Nerds film over? Is it 2 weeks? Is it a month?
Okay, so I think I'm allowed to say this. It's on the order of 3 weeks.
Okay. Alex Kidwell also wants to know, how many spreadsheets do you currently have active solely for the purpose of various monitoring of people / cats / things around your household?
Okay, let me share a few spreadsheets I have. Of course, I have the cat ones, as we discussed. I have a spreadsheet where I keep track of every mile I've ever flown in an airplane since the age of 18.
Okay.
So I have a list of all the flights, and every time I have a new flight, I put in the database. I keep track of like where I laid over, what class I was in. I don't know why I want to keep that information, but I do. And what else do I have? I have, so this is one I actually mentioned in my audition interview. So you know Lazy River tubing?
Yes.
When you sit in a tube and you go down a river. So in Arizona, we have that. But the issue is that depending on the river speed, it could take either an hour or 4 hours, 6 hours to go down the river. And so I found public data where they keep track of the river flow each day. And I, you know, I took measurements on how long it takes to go down the river given different rates, and actually built a spreadsheet to tell you, okay, any day you can look up and it'll tell you what your expected time to actually complete the river is. So I didn't know that. I don't know if people would assume that you can make Lazy River tubing nerdy, but I did.
Okay. Well, you've done it. They said it couldn't be done.
That's right. I lived the dream.
You mentioned in your audition, I'm interested to know, and I think a lot of people are, because I'm sure you get asked this all the time, how do I get on King of the Nerds? What was your process like to get on the show?
Okay, so that's a great question. So I actually applied to season 2.
Yes.
And I didn't get on. I got very close in the process, but I didn't get on. And I was heartbroken about it. Like, I don't know, during the casting process, I was checking my email like every hour, like, oh, did I hear back? And finally, you know, I heard back and it was a no. So I was very disappointed about that. And so season 3 rolls around. I see there's casting and I'm like, that really hurt last time. I don't know if I'm going to try. And I actually got a call from one of the casting people saying, oh, you know, last year you made it really far. You should just consider applying. You know, we just need a video by Monday. Right. And the audition process for King of the Nerds is essentially make a 5-minute YouTube video. Send it in, and if you're interesting or whatever, you're what they're looking for, you'll proceed in the process.
5 minutes is hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to make an interesting 5-minute video.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is that people soon say, oh, this is hard, so I'm just going to make it longer, which is a terrible thing to do.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, if you actually go and look at some people who didn't make it, you know, post their audition videos, and a lot of times it's, you know, 20 minutes of someone being like, well, I like video games, I like Final Fantasy VI. And I think Final Fantasy VI was good. But the point is, you have to make it a compelling story. You have to make it interesting. The whole point is you're going to be on TV, so you want to make it fun. So they needed this video by Monday. And it's like Sunday. I have a friend over to do filming with me. And we're like, let's just play video games instead. So like, okay. So then I go to sleep, and I have this dream where like I dream like, of like just my dream is filled with regret, and like I want to get on King of the Nerds, but I can't. And so I wake up in the morning and I'm like, nope, I'm making that video. I don't care if it's Monday. You know, I'm gonna skip work for a little bit, gonna make the video, send it off, and see what happens. So I whip together a video real fast, and that ends up getting me on the show.
Wow.
Yeah, I got really lucky.
Okay, and that was your video for season 3.
Yes, exactly.
So, and you had a different video for season 2.
So with the video for season 2, actually, so I made a video and I tried to make it really clever and stuff. And then I sent it in. They're like, oh, that was good, but you should send us more material.
Yeah.
And so I sent them more material, and then they asked for one more time. And so I sent them all this stuff and I put tons of effort into it and it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
At the time, I'm like, oh, I'll just whip something together real quick and see how it goes. Maybe it's because I was less nervous, you know, because I didn't care as much. But that was the one that got me the win.
Yeah. I don't think you seem nervous on the show. I thought you seemed like you really handled everything well between the competitions, but also like the reality TV stuff. Like, I felt like you were very natural where, you know, some of the people on King of the Nerds are good because they're so awkward at it, but I feel like you really did a good job with the reality TV stuff, like talking to the camera. So good job with that.
Thank you. You know, it's funny. I actually do something I've noticed when I'm talking to a camera or when I'm teaching in front of a class. I actually have this thing that I call announcer voice, where I actually use a different voice because I'm like, now I'm going to tell you something in a different voice. And anytime I'm watching myself on camera, I'm thinking, oh God, I'm using an announcer voice. But apparently no one noticed but me. So thank you.
Okay. Well, great job.
thank you.
Jonathan, thank you for coming on the show with us. I'm sure that lots of people out there are excited to hear from you. And the ones that aren't excited to hear from you probably didn't even listen. So you're only talking to the people that wanted to hear from you.
Wait, you mean not everyone's happy I'm king? I didn't know that. I thought everyone only wanted me to win.
No, there might be some dissenters to the crown. No, you did a great job. Again, thank you for coming on. If you want to follow Jonathan on Twitter, he's Sky Etra.
So it's Sky, S-K-Y-E, which is an unnecessarily cool way to spell Sky. Yes. And then Tetra, which is an unnecessarily cool way to say the number 4. And by cool, I mean lame, but we'll run with it.
Yes. King of the Nerds, I think of any reality show, has the people with the hardest Twitter handles to comprehend what they're supposed to be.
That's right. We can't make it easy for our fans.
Yes. All right. Well, Jonathan, thank you for coming on, and I'll talk to you again soon. Hopefully.
That's right. For All-Star season, maybe.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Jonathan Adler here on the podcast. Very fun to talk to, and congratulations again to Jonathan, winner of King of the Nerds. Season 3, winner, winner, chicken dinner. So we have a big week coming up now, coming up on the week of the 23rd here on the podcast. I'm going to get it started with some spicing. Then we're going to talk to AJ Mass and do the archetypes with only 13 players left in the Survivor season. We've got a Big Brother Canada premiere. We have another Survivor episode with Survivor Know-It-Alls. Plus, I'll talk to the next person kicked off of Survivor. We'll have an interview with Jim Rice, who will be my guest on the podcast this week. So plenty to do here on a busy, busy week at the end of March here in 2015. Of course, the podcast award voting will continue for a couple more days. You can vote up until Tuesday for Rob as a Podcast for the podcast awards at podcastawards.com, best entertainment podcast and People's Choice Podcast of the Year. We'll see if I am crowned King of the Podcasts this April at the Podcast Award. So thanks again for listening, everybody. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments on robiswebsite.com. And we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.